Welcome to the Open House Podcast. Conversations exploring life, faith and hope with Stephen O'Doherty.
Well, one of the major concerns Christians had about the decision to legislate for same-sex marriage was the impact such a change would have on people who believe in the traditional or biblical view of marriage, one man, one woman, excluding all others faithfully unto life. While not advocating discrimination towards same-sex attracted Australians, would a change to the Marriage Act create problems for people of faith who have that religious view? That's, of course, a large part of what the No campaign was saying during the whole postal survey period. A great deal of the debate was concerned on that issue of religious freedom. And the Yes proponents assured us that the law provided sufficient protections already, that celebrants and religious venues would not be forced to act against their convictions. And when No voters expressed concerns about religious freedoms that might require more protection in, for example, schools and in charities and in other places, they were decried as homophobes and bigots who wanted to discriminate against the LGBT community. Well, the legislation has passed, no amendments, no extension of the religious protections, and we have the Ruddock Committee now, the Ruddock Inquiry, that will report in March about whether any other form of protection might be required. Look, let's be clear, this is not about the classic example of the cake maker or the florist who won't provide services for a gay wedding. It's not about that. Before the definition of marriage changed, it was illegal for a business offering services to the public to discriminate on the basis of sexuality, and it still is. So people, you know, who think carefully about this issue are not arguing for that right, the right that, as George Brandis once described, to be a bigot. I notice he doesn't say that anymore. It's about much bigger things than the trimmings that go with a wedding. It's about the right of religious people and organisations to have a view that counters the prevailing zeitgeist. For instance, will parents and schools still be allowed to teach children the religious understanding of marriage? You might remember, if you saw the Q&A program a few weeks ago when I was debating George Brandis himself on this very issue, I raised questions like this and George Brandis said, "Stephen, that has nothing to do with it." And I just beg to differ, because in Western Australia right now, there are claims that a teacher was let go from a Christian school because he was gay and living in a same-sex relationship. And because of that, the LGBTI community in Western Australia says times have changed, Christian schools need to move on, they shouldn't be allowed to choose staff on the basis of their religious adherence, particularly when that relates to their sexuality. Well, to walk through this issue, which I think is the first clear-cut nexus between the same-sex marriage debate, legislation, and an erosion of religious freedoms, or at least an attempt to do so, is Mark Spencer. Mark Spencer is National Policy Advisor to Christian Schools Australia. Good evening, Mark.
Good evening, Stephen.
It seems like you were probably one of the first people we spoke to when we found out the postal survey was going ahead, as a matter of fact. And here you are now at the other end of the debate, and some of the things we were worried about have come to pass.
Yes, and I wish I wasn't talking to you tonight in many ways, but here we are again.
Here we are. Well, it's always nice to talk to you, Mark, anyway. So thank you.
And likewise.
Of course. Mark, so exactly what happened in Western Australia? Was a teacher sacked by a school because he's gay?
No, and that's just one of the innumerable errors and half-truths and mistruths around this issue. He was a relief teacher. He was simply not engaged any further by the school. And for the purpose of this discussion, the real issue there was that there was an inconsistency, which he himself had recognised, between his beliefs expressed through his lifestyle and those of the college around sexuality and sexual expression.
In what way had he recognised that?
If you read the media articles and some of his comments in the media, he acknowledged that he knew that the life he was living was inconsistent with the values and beliefs of the school. He knew that the Facebook post that he shared with students or was seen by students was likely to cause the school some concern. According to some of the earlier media coverage, he went and raise these concerns with one of the heads of department within the school.
Mm. Now, What is the legal position relating to Christian schools? I know it's different in every state, but we'll start with Western Australia, then we'll just might expand out a little bit. But what's the situation in the West?
Look, it is different in every state, but only marginally. There's a large clump of states with two with slightly different provisions, but both the federal jurisdiction and almost all states and territories around the country have an Equal Opportunity Act or an Anti-Discrimination Act. And the way these acts are drafted is they have a very broad, very sweeping prohibition against discrimination. But an essential part of the legislative scheme that they're part of is that broad sweeping prohibition is balanced by a range of exemptions. So in the WA Act, for example, there are 32 different exemptions covering a range of things. Professional sport, working in a political office, are both areas of life which are exempted from the provision of the Act. And you couldn't have the AFL, you couldn't have the NRL, and most political parties couldn't operate without those sort of exemptions.
No, that doesn't mean that women can't play AFL, but it says in men's sport, men play, and in women's sport, women play.
Again, the wording differs slightly around the country, but it broadly says where strength and stamina or those sort of attributes are affected, then you can discriminate.
The best example of all, I think, is the hypocrisy of political parties, some of whom say that there shouldn't be an exemption for faith-based organisations, but there is an exemption so that if you are a Liberal Member of Parliament, for instance, you can discriminate if a person identifies as a Labor voter. Yes, I vote Labor, but I'd love to come and work for you. You can say, sorry, need not apply, and the law protects me.
Yeah, and the same for the Labor Party and for the Greens and the other minor parties.
All right, so why is it important that Christian schools ought to be able to actively discriminate, exempt from the law, in order to choose a person of a particular faith? And how does that relate to sexuality?
Well, it relates to really the nature of our schools. I don't think anyone really nowadays thinks that schools are just about the 3 hours or just about the academic provision. It's about developing the whole person. The Melbourne Declaration on Education, agreed to by all the state and territory education ministers some time ago, refers to that itself in the preamble when it talks about the sort of education we want to provide in Australia. It talks about developing the whole child. And that's particularly the focus of our schools as Christian schools. We want to have the ability to not just teach them in the narrow academic sense, but also emotionally, spiritually, relationally. We want them to be wonderful citizens of Australia with a sense of who they are in God as well.
Our guest is Mark Spencer. He's an executive officer with Christian Schools Australia. He's their policy executive officer. And this week, you may have noticed, Mark was involved in a discussion in Western Australia about this very issue of religious freedom, a thing we've been concerned about during the same-sex marriage debate. And if you'd like to join us on the phone tonight, 1300 40 2020 is our number. But Mark, in a subject like maths or English, or even for a casual relief teacher as this man was in Western Australia, why should Christian schools be able to knock back non-Christians?
Probably the best way of understanding is that old African proverb about taking a village to raise a child. In the same way, in our Christian schools, it takes the whole learning community of that Christian school to raise that child with their parents, working alongside them, sharing their values, modelling their values, teaching their values, reflecting those values and beliefs in their relationships and all they do. So it's about the whole person education and teachers and other staff modelling that and teaching both through the formal and informal curriculum of the school.
Yes, it often occurs to me that the people who argue against that really fail to understand any sense of an integration of faith and life as expressed through a school. So to teach English, of course, requires that you are bringing that text alive, and there's a whole set of values, assumptions that goes with that. You can't teach that in a neutral space, and so a Christian school is a faith community where all of that, the whole of life, brings to light, you know, your belief in Jesus Christ, and the way that the community works together depends on that. And it's all very well to say that you can abide by the school rules and be a teacher in that environment, but a Christian school is built on the foundation that it's a Christian community that's discipling those children as it goes through. So, Mark, what's the link between a practicing Christian and someone of a non-traditional sexuality?
Well,
a same-sex attracted teacher.
Fundamentally, the issue there is about the beliefs that that person obviously holds by their lifestyle, by their actions, around sexuality, sexual identity, sexual preference, and what is acceptable sexual practice for an individual. Now, as Christian schools, we take a fairly traditional, fairly biblical approach to that. We view sexual expression as being part of and properly expressed through marriage between a man and a woman, as part of God's ordained process for starting a family and creating the next generation.
And so you don't actually have to agree with that statement. I'm obviously, clearly we do at Open House, but you don't have to agree with that statement to at least be able to see that, given that it's a view of the church ought to be able to teach its view, unless that is you want to, shut down churches or prevent them from teaching kids about traditional church views.
Exactly. It really is to try to shut down that view. It really is a fairly draconian attempt to shut down freedom of speech, freedom of expression more broadly.
Well, now, during the same-sex marriage survey, along with others who are advocating a no position, I was challenged with the idea that it has absolutely nothing to do with schools. The marriage issue was completely separate. It was only about love, and it was only about being able to get married. And before whatever I'm about to say next, I'll just say that I have no quibble with the result. Clearly, the majority of Australians wanted that, and the legislation's gone through, and I'm very happy that it's gone through, and democracy has been served. But here's the point. There now are a number of writers who are already saying that the results of the same-sex marriage postal survey show that we need to now become completely inclusive, including in Christian schools. Have they started? What's the link that they've drawn in Western Australia between this teacher and the same-sex marriage issue?
And that's exactly where the debate in Western Australia started. Brian Gregg, former Democrats politician, very, very clever politician, made that clear link between the results of the postal survey, or the anticipated results of the postal survey. He wrote a letter to the WA Premier prior to about a week before the results were announced, and on the basis of what he assumed the results would be, and I must say too that as an organisation we've accepted the results and don't want to get in the way of the change, and it obviously has happened.
Mm-hmm.
But before the results were even announced, he wrote to the Premier and said, given what's likely to happen in relation to the law regarding same-sex marriage, that the WA government should close what he described as an extraordinary loophole. A wonderfully evocative term. He's a very good politician, and claimed that it was out of step with the rest of the country, which it clearly isn't. It's very similar to every other state and territory.
Yeah, so to accept that would be to accept that an opinion poll of the people, even a postal survey, ought to determine effectively the catechism or the set of beliefs and values taught in Christian schools.
Absolutely, and if you look at the news poll reported through the course of the postal survey, that reported that 62% of Australians actually supported religious freedoms in the bill that amended the definition of marriage. So the same percentage as actually voted for a change in the definition voted for religious freedoms, or in the independent news poll said that they also wanted their religious freedom protections.
And now
Elsewhere, the percentage was 90% in a report in The Australian during the survey process.
90%, yeah. Mm. Mark Spencer is with us from Christian Schools Australia. 1-300-40-2020, if you'd like to join the discussion tonight. So then the next thing that happened was this. And again, the no case during the campaign was saying there could even be threats to funding for church-run organisations as a consequence of the marriage thing, unless we're careful, unless we put in place a protection. Well, guess what? So now someone has started threatening the funding of Christian schools in Western Australia, once again on the strength of the same-sex marriage result.
It is. It is a very ironic that we were told for a number of months there was absolutely no connection, and now we're finding exactly that those connections are there very strongly.
So what has been the challenge?
And that was part of the support groups, the LGBT, some of the community groups over there, have indicated that that exemption that provides the freedom we need to exist as Christian schools, the fundamental freedom we need to exist as Christian schools, mm-hmm. shouldn't be continued if we receive government funding.
Now, what sort of response have those calls had from the West Australian government?
We've written to the WA Premier, Attorney General and the Education Minister, and I was part of a group of schools that Christian school principals that met with the Education Minister, a pre-arranged meeting that fell nicely last week. But she gave some broad assurances that they hadn't had or formed a government position at this stage. They were seeking information and advice.
What do you mean they hadn't formed an opinion? They've got existing legislation that goes back decades. How can they not form an opinion? It's the law. I mean, the question is, are you going to change the law? The answer surely would have been no.
That would have been a reassuring answer. But at this stage, they are looking for legal advice. I'm not quite sure what their legal advice will say, apart from the law is there and this is how the law works. Mm. But they are looking for legal advice and to understand the law and its operation, presumably. Mm. And will then form an opinion, and they have committed to, if there is any proposal or change, that it'll be a public consultation process, and they'll consider a range of views. But it's still obviously quite concerning that they haven't got to this stage, as you say.
Mm. Well, Mark Spencer, on this program we like to look at life through the lens of faith and point to hope. I know that you've been arguing, debating this issue now for many decades in your various roles with the Christian schools movement. Give us some hope, based on your experience. Give us some hope around this.
The hope is always that politicians are, by and large, decent people. It is often a case of they don't really understand the nature of Christian schools and understand the nature of our faith communities. And once they are made more aware of who we are, the sort of schools we are, the nature of our schools, and why we need these exemptions, they don't proceed with these changes. And we've certainly been able to, with the support of the community across the country, been able to stop these changes in their tracks over the last couple of decades. Mm. We have protections in international law we can refer to. We have protections both at the Commonwealth and the state and territory level across the country that reflect sensible policy, a sensible balancing of different rights.
Well, let's hope that prevails, but it is a very interesting observation that even before the legislation had passed the Parliament, people were making a link between that and a potential change to Christian schools in a way that could potentially rob them of both freedom and also funding. Mark Spencer, thank you for joining us.
Pleasure, Stephen.
Discover more Open House podcasts at openhousecommunity.com.au.